When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Delphic Smith, Australia, stand up out of your chairs. Delphic Smith waits for the judges, and this multi-millionaire mogul now has the best kind of goal.
The Thunderbird 144-8.
The Cap 720.
Oh! Tora Brunt has gone smack!
Tora Brunt is an Olympic gold medalist.
Chuck scores! It's Poulin again! Canada wins gold in overtime!
Nedeczka tucks for the line! 121-12! What another recovery from the youngster! Oh! She's taken gold! She's taken gold! The world champion in parallel giant slalom snowboarding is in gold medal position here!
It is Off the Podium, an Olympics podcast coming to you today for another athlete interview, and a great interview coming down your speakers. We're taking a break from our summer athletes to go back winter as we speak to three-time Australian Olympian Jenny Lyons. As you might remember her as Jenny Owens, competed in Salt Lake, Vancouver and Sochi in two different sports, if you don't mind, was an alpine skier in Salt Lake City and then a freestyle skier in Vancouver and Sochi, where she competed in ski cross. Now, Jenny holds a record. Besides Zali Stegel's bronze medal in Nagano, she holds the record for the highest ever finish at an Olympics by an Australian in alpine skiing. She finished ninth in the combined in Salt Lake City, a record that still stands to this day. And Jenny talks about that experience and her other Olympic experiences, what brought about the switch to ski cross, and her experiences at both Vancouver and Sochi, as well as her X Games experiences. Won a bronze medal at the X Games, if you don't mind. So plenty to cover in this chat. Very honest and open chat here from Jenny, and I know you are going to love every single second of it. So sit back, relax, and listen to our chat with three-time Australian Olympic skier Jenny Lyons. Taking a bit of a break from our summer athletes to get back into the winter athletes, because let's be honest, as people listen to this show, you know we like winter better. And what better way to talk about winter athletes and winter sports than with a three-time Olympian in two different sports? And I am always a fan of multiple sport athletes. That's why we love things like modern pentathlon, Nordic combined, all of those sports. And competed at the Salt Lake Olympics in alpine skiing, where she achieved Australia's best ever result in the sport of alpine skiing outside of Zali Stegel's bronze medal, a ninth place in the combined. And outside of that, went on to compete in freestyle skiing in ski cross in both Vancouver and Sochi. X Games medalist, World Cup medalist in freestyle skiing, and plenty to cover in a great career. It's a pleasure to welcome Jenny Owens, now Jenny Lyons, to the show. Yeah. Jenny, welcome to Off the Podium.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I had to get through all of that quickly, and just obviously to make sure that people are aware that you were Jenny Owens, now Jenny Lyons, of course. I mean, do you still get the Jenny Owens from sort of the career that people sort of bring up, I guess, sometimes?
Yeah, and I still get called Jenny Owens, people not knowing my new name. Even though that was in 2000, when did we get married? 2016. Feels like a while ago now.
That was actually just a secret test there to make sure you were remembered when you got married. You know, your husband secretly passing. Make sure she remembers. We need to test that. But I just love looking at everything that you've achieved across your career, and obviously in two different sports. And I believe you started skiing very young, 4 years old, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? What sort of brought about the skiing bug when you did eventually strap on those skis?
Well, it was just more of a family thing. I feel like most families start out with venturing off to the snow, however old you were, you know, sort of long weekends turn into a week here and there. We started going overseas to North America when I was maybe seven or eight. And then, yes, did like the Billy Kidd Race Club and stuff over there and got better, and did the Southern Alps Ski Club weekend down here, and won a little trip to go on a race week with their group at Perisher, and then the Perisher Race Club saw me skiing and asked if I wanted to join the race club the next year. And I was like, you know, sure, why not? And it all sort of bore on from there, really.
Was it a case of obviously doing ski racing, alpine skiing at that point? Were there many options in the freestyle disciplines at that point in Australia? Obviously a lot different now, but sort of back then, were there options to pursue that then?
Yes, I remember, and a lot of people from Perisher remember in that era, it was the Malibu Moguls team.
Wow.
I used to get around. Malibu was their sponsor. It wasn't super popular. Alpine skiing was obviously more popular. Snowboarding was just starting to come in, where I think Zeke really was the only one, Zeke Stegall. And, you know, it was weird. Snowboarding was a weird thing back then. There wasn't very many people doing it. And so Moguls was a bit similar because back then I think they were still doing ballet.
Oh, the glory of ski ballet.
Sport.
Missed that sport. What a sport.
Yeah. But obviously aerials was around too. But, I mean, that was more down in Buller, so you didn't really see that. It was – freestyle was around, but obviously ski cross wasn't, but back when I started and – I don't know why I chose alpine. I guess it was just that's sort of the one that most people, I guess, fall into first.
Was there option for Nordic? Was that ever kind of on the table?
I did it in a school, and I always was told I had, you know, if I wanted to be in more of a cardio sport, I'd be perfect because my lungs were huge, had man sized lungs, but mentally, I was never good at that stuff because I was never good at pushing myself through those pain barriers of what you sort of need to do at those sports. So, no.
It's always fascinating, particularly from the Australian angle, where kind of obviously, you know, skiing, it's not like in other parts of the world where it's just sort of part of life, where you kind of have those options. And I guess sort of, you know, different eras of athletes we get on this show, Jenny, when now if we're sort of getting a, you know, an Olympian who's, say, been in Beijing and, say, freestyle skiing is a lot more, you know, diverse now than it was sort of back when you were starting. It's just kind of always interesting. And the Nordic skiers we get on this show, I always just like to find out, like, oh, were you ski racing and you went to Nordic? Like, there seems to be much more of a separation between the Nordic disciplines versus the alpine and the freestyle disciplines.
Yeah. It would be interesting. I'd be interested actually to hear how they get involved in that because it is a bit of an odd one for Australians to be like that's the first sport you sort of choose in the winner category.
Yeah, for sure. Were you active in many other sports growing up as well alongside skiing?
Yes, I was. I did everything. I was good at sports. I was not so great at school. I didn't get a lot of appraisal at school, and when I did sport, I got a lot of appraisal. So that was what I cared about most, obviously. And I was good at everything. The only sport I sucked at really was tennis. It didn't matter how many tennis lessons I did. There was way too much concentration needed to get the ball back across the net numerous times.
Was there another one that perhaps had skiing not worked out, like through all those ones that you were good at, that potentially was the other one that we could have been talking to you about as an Olympian?
Yeah, well... Yes, I was a good swimmer. I was a strong swimmer. I used to go to state level at school. But when I was an older athlete, looking back and being around the swimmers at the AIS, they were like up here. And I'm down here. And I was just like, I don't know if I would have ever made it as a swimmer. Just my height is, you know, I'm not 6 foot, I'm 5'6". So I don't know if that would ever have happened.
Big lungs though, right? Like that's got to help in swimming. How do you take that when you're told it? And what age? Like how? I have so many questions about discovering you've got big lungs. Is this just like some sort of you go to the AIS, they do some scans? Like, Jenny, you've got big lungs.
I used to have trouble breathing when we did intervals or cardio stuff. And it was because I wasn't using my full lungs. I wasn't emptying out all the oxygen from my lungs.
Wow.
So I just would always say, I thought maybe I had asthma. And anyway, we did all these tests and it just turned out that my lungs were really big. I needed to learn to use my lung capacity better.
Interesting. Yeah. How does that help in skiing? Like what?
It doesn't.
Okay. Well, there you go. Easy answer. You chose the wrong sport then. What sport should you have been doing? Swimming maybe. I mean, you just needed to be tall then.
I would, for my height, triathlon would have been a good one.
Ah, of course. Right.
Yeah. Swimming, running, riding, no height needed.
Did you grow up as a family watching the Olympics? Was it something that was sort of always on every 4 or every 2 years, I guess, with the winter and the summers?
Yes, but my dream was to go to gymnastics.
Ah, nice.
Not that that was ever going to be a possibility. And then obviously swimming, and then it sort of just turned into skiing. But I sort of never dreamed. I dreamed of going to the Olympics when I was young, but then when I was skiing and going through the process of working my way to that, it wasn't, I don't remember it being like, oh, I want to go to the Olympics, that's my goal. I sort of chipped away at things as I went, like wanting to win nationals in the seniors, and then I wanted to, you know, win a Europa Cup or a fist race, or get top 15 at Europa. You know, I had my little goals along the way that I was ticking off, and it was just so happens that I qualify. I mean, obviously when I went world champs to qualify for the Olympics, that was my goal, to qualify for the Olympics at that world championships.
Was it a case of sort of ultimately you make that debut in Salt Lake, but was Nagano ever a prospect sort of when you were on that, with that scene at all?
Yeah, that was the plan. And then just everything went shit. After Salt Lake, things were on track. We had a really great training year leading into the following season. And then we had, my coach had played around with my boot setup, and it worked great for technical stuff. But what we hadn't thought of, we moved to my speed boots as well. And the whole season I'd been sitting on my edges on the flats. I was really fast in the turns and then really slow on the flats. And normally it was the other way around. I'd be faster on the tucking sections and not great in the turns. And we couldn't figure out what was going on the next year. So we had a disaster year. And then once we figured it out, it was all a bit too late going into world champs, but got injured there anyway. And then my coach retired from coaching as his wife was pregnant. And then no one bothered to ever get me another coach, or I was the only one left. So I was on my own. And so I joined up with the Canadian team the following year. But I mean, I was coming back from injury and I really needed some focus, and the arrangement wasn't all that good. And I don't think that the head coach really wanted me there. And it was sort of their eight athletes and then me. And so it just didn't work. And I think I was halfway through the season and I just decided, this is ridiculous. I'm wasting my time. I'm wasting my money. I'm not going to get to Torino and reach, you know, even come close to ninth. I feel like I would have been either ninth or worse. And I didn't want that. I wanted to do better. So I just decided to retire halfway through the season.
So to clarify, that's after Salt Lake. So that's obviously in the lead up to Torino. But I guess sort of to clarify, for Nagano for 98, were you the Olympics prior to Salt Lake, was that ever sort of on the horizon, sort of as you were working through the ranks?
Sorry, did I just go off on a tangent?
It's like you fit in very well on this show, Jenny. I will say we go on tangents very much on this show. But you did answer a great question that I was going to ask. So you've made my job easier after the Salt Lake question. So thank you for that.
So Nagano is the one before,
yes,
right?
Yes, 98. Yeah, so yes.
No, I didn't qualify for that. I don't even know if that was really on the cards. Maybe it was. Honestly, I can't remember. It's so long ago. I do know Alice Jones at the time qualified, and then she blew an E like the next day or something. So she didn't end up going. I don't remember. I don't even remember what Alice did to qualify. I don't remember that far.
Testing the memory. That's what we like to do on this show, to really push it there. I mean, I guess the question around Nagano sort of in the lead up to Salt Lake is obviously what Zali achieved, the bronze and everything, that no doubt the exposure that put on the sport. How did you find then kind of that period in the lead up to Salt Lake, and were there a lot more eyes on you and sort of like the team, given that Zali achieved a medal, and so a lot more people in Australia were probably a bit more aware of alpine skiing?
I don't know. I mean, I think people are aware of it. It's not the most exciting sport to watch. It's same person, you know, different people going down one after another over and over and over and over and over again.
Swimming, though, Jenny, that's just people going back and forth against a wall. Come on.
Yeah, but you can see who's winning.
True, but you don't crash in swimming. We're secretly watching you to crash.
Way more interesting. I mean, I like to watch alpine skiing, but I understand from an Australian, if you don't really know what's happening, watching runner after runner is a bit like, okay, what else is on? But yeah, I don't know. I think if you know someone who is an Aussie, you sort of watch, but I don't think there's a huge interest in it.
I always just remember, and we had Zali on the show many years ago before she's gone on to now, you know, be what, her post-skiing career. But, yeah, you know, I remember fanboying out a little bit because that was really my first proper exposure to a Winter Olympics Nagano. And I remember being home from school and watching her win that medal, and I had it on tape and I would watch it on like repeat so many times. So that sort of really drew me into the sport a lot more. So I remember when Salt Lake rolled around and it was like, I've got to watch more of this sport. Like, you know, I've got to see it because there's just something that, I guess, from my perspective, draws you into a sport in a country where you're not exposed to it. Obviously, you're around it, you're living that life, but I guess for a lot of people where we're watching it every 4 years and, you know, back then prior to Foxtel and all those sort of things where you couldn't watch it all the time, it was fascinating. So I think that's where I think, like, the Olympics helped expose a lot of Australians and Zali in particular to areas where maybe we weren't getting that coverage prior to when we were starting to win medals in the Winter Olympics, of course.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, for me, it's interesting to watch, and it's nice to know that other people who join into it, being curious about it. I like to watch it now because I give feedback to the commentator at the moment.
As in, like, are you sitting next to them, or are you texting them, going like, Bruce, come on, do better?
No, it's a British guy, and I feel for the women. He's a bit negative, so it annoys me. I can see what's happening. I can see, you know, I like to watch the technique and see who's fast and what's happening. And to me, it's interesting because it's a sport I used to do. But, yeah, it's good to know that other people get drawn into it.
Well, I like hearing that too, because we had I worked for Seven during Beijing. So I met people like Katja and Jono Brow. We had Jono on the show and kind of it was great to sort of get that insight and learn what, you know, they're talking about and everything as well. Like, and I guess that's a great part of having done what you've done, is that you can bring that analysis. I mean, do you find that part of it when you're getting asked to do things like that a little bit extra fun, that you can kind of use all those expertise and go, oh, this is a bit different now. I can sit here and be in the chair rather than compete.
Oh, I'd much rather be competing. Who wants to sit in the chair? No, I mean, it is nice to sometimes be sitting in a chair, but I miss competing, and I reckon I still would today if I could.
Oh, what's stopping you, Jenny? Come on. Like, you know, spring chicken still, right, you know?
I mean, I don't think my age is an issue. Others would say otherwise, but, I mean, I sort of like, oh, if I won millions of dollars, I'd probably throw some into it and make a point that us old ducks can still have something to give.
Hey, I just use Andrew Hoy as a perfect example. What was he, 62 in Tokyo, and he's trying to get back to Paris? So, I mean, you know, equestrian, a little bit different to skiing, I get that. But at the same time.
Yeah, ski across isn't a sport, I feel. It's not like alpine skiing where there's a lot of physical need going there. It's still physical, but it's different. It's a sport I feel you could actually still be fast at an older age. Your body may not handle the crashes as well, but I feel like you could still be pretty competitive.
Nick Baumgartner was what, like 40, wasn't he, when he won gold in Beijing? So I mean, you know, like, I mean, just a couple.
25 years past that, you know.
Couple years there. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, you know, just never say never.
But never. That's right. I mean, I just need someone who would like to maybe sponsor me about half a meal to do it, to get me to my fourth Olympics, and I'll do it.
we've got some good friends on this show, Jenny. You could have the right one listening today. Who knows? You could be getting a phone call. What do you remember? The moment or sort of that period in qualifying for Salt Lake? Obviously you touched on sort of the Olympics, sort of, you know, what that, you know, qualifying for it was, but was there a moment when you were an Olympian that you felt like, I'm an Olympian now, like at qualification, standing on top of the hill there in Salt Lake, was there kind of a moment that any of it hit you at all?
Yeah, I feel like the first Olympics, I mean, like, for instance, walking into the opening ceremony was one of my highlights of the Olympics.
Great opening ceremony too in Salt Lake. Fantastic opening ceremony.
Yeah, and, like, you know, we're in America, so the crowd cheer we get is much bigger than most other countries that you'd probably be in. So, yeah, it was like, I don't know, I think it was only 60,000 in the arena. Still a big number. But, yeah, like the roar, and we're all just jumping up and down, like, going, oh, yeah, this is awesome. Like, the adrenaline rush from that was just so cool. And then obviously my ninth place was a highlight too. But like I do remember the combined was up first. No, it wasn't. Was it downhill, I think. And I probably spent too much time wandering around the crowd and checking it all out before my race and being part of the crowd because I wasn't maybe until 31 or something. And it sort of freaked me out a bit by the time I got up there. And it was good that we had that first because I feel I got that out of my system. I made the mistake. And for the day of the combine, I had my head screwed on much better, was, you know, taking it as I would a normal race and prepped myself and did all the inspections and really sort of focused a bit more than you know, on the downhill. I was a bit, you know, like a deer in headlights.
Which ninth in that combined, which, as I said in the intro, I mean, outside of Zali's bronze, the best ever finish by an Australian in alpine skiing at the Olympics, which, I mean, a great achievement. I mean, is that the highlight of your career? I mean, obviously winning X Games bronze and those sort of things I'm sure are fantastic, but at least on the alpine side of things, was that the highlight of your alpine career?
Yeah, I mean, that was the goal we'd set. We'd set top 10. Slalom wasn't my strongest point at that time, and we did put a lot more into slalom after that because we saw the opportunity. But, yeah, it was definitely the highlight, and because it was sort of, you know, we set a tough goal. It wasn't like it was going to be a walk in the park. I had to really ski well to get that. So, obviously, when I did come ninth, you know, that I was pumped. That was, I basically won. That was how I felt.
Which it's, I mean, such a great games in general for Australia. Of course, obviously we know with Stephen and Alyssa winning the gold and everything that came with that. But like, I mean, just what was the vibe, the mood around just Australia at those Olympics? Can you sort of remember it and compare it at all to your other two subsequent Olympics in Vancouver and Sochi?
Yes. It was. I mean, it was really cool to be a part of that Olympics with the medals. But we had a big team there too. It was our biggest alpine team and still is our biggest alpine team today. But I must say, I didn't ever enjoy the Olympics. I found it very stressful.
Wow.
So much. I mean, you planned for 4 years and the build-up. Like when I left the games after Salt Lake, it wasn't until I got to the next World Cup and we got there, I think a few days before, and we were so jet lagged and it all just hit me. And I just broke out in all this acne, which I never had. And it was just from all the stress and the pressure. And it was just like, oh my God, what's going on? And yeah, obviously that was all just from all the crazy. And so, I didn't enjoy it to that regard because of the pressure going in. And the good thing with me, all the Olympics I've been to, I always qualified a year before. So I didn't have that lead up pressure to trying to qualify like, you know, a month out or 3 weeks before, or, you know, trying to scramble to do it when I know some people did, which that's the part I didn't like. It made it very stressful to be around. I could plan my year going in knowing what I had to do. But still, yeah, I didn't really like it. So my goal in Russia, knowing it would be my last Olympics, unless someone wants to sponsor me.
just always put that as an asterisk. Always put that as an asterisk.
Slipping that one in there.
Yep.
One of my goals was to enjoy it. I did a lot of work with my sports psych, and it was about being there. And whenever I enjoyed myself and was happy, I always usually performed my best. So that was the goal, is to be happy, enjoy the Olympics, have fun. And I did. I didn't ski my best. I had some issues leading in that to that Olympics, but I didn't ski as well as I wanted to probably the year out before that. But when I got there, I couldn't have expected more than what I did. But I had a big smile on my face. I remember even being in the start gate just going, like, this is awesome, can't wait to ski down. And you know, I had fun, and that was the goal. So I was happy with my result there because of, you know, my plan.
And does that then lead to other things outside of the competition bit, where maybe village life you can experience a bit differently, you know, pin trading, you know, meeting other athletes, doing that. I mean, I had great conversations with Jono around the fun of Vancouver.
So,
I don't know, like, if that's something that you take a little bit differently once you're going to your second and third Olympics versus that first Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, I was 23 at the first Olympics, or 22, something like that. So, yeah, just young, I guess, even though you don't see that. And then obviously by the time I got to my next one in Vancouver, I was much older. There was more to take in, more to do, you know, again, another English-speaking country. So, again, more fun. We weren't in Salt Lake, so I guess the parties and the
alcohol's probably allowed.
entertainment stuff going on was a bit more, you know, loud. And more things to do, I guess, around the place to see and do. And then there was Russia.
Yeah. I will touch on that. But, I mean, kind of almost as close to a home Winter Olympics as maybe a lot of Australians will get in Vancouver, being Whistler is like kind of like Australia Junior, right? And I believe you'd skied there a lot. So I guess that added to it as well, didn't it? A lot of Aussies would have been there for that.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. It's a really good place to have it. It was just lucky. We're lucky that the weather held up.
Yes, exactly. You obviously touched on a little bit what happened after Salt Lake, sort of the retirement. But what then led to the switch to freestyle and then into ski cross?
I think it started out, I was watching the ski cross on TV that year, like the World Cup. They were showing it on TV during the summer in Australia. And I'd never done a winter, like worked a winter or done a proper winter, always, you know, travel around with your bag from event to event. So a friend of mine and me decided, like, oh, let's go do a season. And because we were doing this season, I went, why just do a season? Why don't I try this ski cross stuff? Like, I always wanted to try it, but when I retired from Alpine, I just wanted to retire. I thought I was done. I was never skiing again. And so we decided, okay, we'll go do a season. Oh, and while I'm there, I'll go to these, I guess some of it was pro, some of it were World Cups. And I did my first one down in Crested Butte, and I came third, and I think I won about $4,000 US, and I was like, this is cool. So basically I just jumped around the tour that season, winning money, and mostly whatever money I won, I put it towards to get to the next event. And then I'd sort of jump between there and Fernie in Canada, where my friend was. So, and then just obviously I did well. So it was like, right, let's do this. Be a bit more serious about it.
Keep going. Is there much when it comes from switching between alpine and freestyle, you know, sort of things like, say, a downhill to a ski race? I mean, to me, someone who doesn't know skiing that well, Jenny, it seems very similar. You've got skis on your feet. That's the simple thing. There's snow. But I can imagine there's a lot more to it. Was there much of a transition that you found switching from alpine to freestyle?
Technically, no. But with the tactics, because you've got people all around you, was very unusual. I was not used to being behind someone. And, you know, if you're behind them and you seem to be faster than them, how the hell do I get past them? So learning all that stuff was a bit tricky. And I guess the difference in our turns, and I know a lot of the alpiners, especially some of the Euros, really badmouth ski cross and how we're not good technical skiers, and where the couldn't make it's in alpines that have gone, but it's not quite true. The technique used in our turns is washed and ugly, because you can't, you know, like a race car, you can't come from behind and make a nice arc and generate speed. You basically have to pin it straight at the gate and do a really sharp, quick back that way, because if you do come from behind, you open the gate up for someone to come straight on the inside of you. And if they get on the inside of you, even if they're doing a shit-house turn, they're still going to be in front of you and push you out to the side, and then you're out, and even maybe two other people have gone past you at the same time. So technically we don't look as good, you don't have to be strong, as strong technically as an alpine skier, but there's also other things going on, like moving over the jumps, pressing the jumps, jumping over jumps, you know. There's a lot more involved. You need to be good at a few things, and even just getting out of the start gate, you've got to be fast. So There was a lot to learn.
But I also can imagine it was more fun. Like, I mean, you sort of touched on about how, like, watching, like, some people, like, might not find watching people ski down a slope between gates exciting, but you've got crash, bash, and action. I mean, people are thrilled. We saw it with the snowboard, and then it turned, you know, when we eventually saw the skiing discipline debut in Vancouver. So I guess as an athlete, it's just more fun.
Yeah, and obviously when I started too, it wasn't an Olympic event yet, so it was more about the pro events, and, you know, you do an event, there'd be an after-event party, and you move on to the next one. So, there's everyone worked together. Usually you're in a Solomon team or a head team. You didn't compete for your country per se. You're sort of competing for the ski company. It was a lot of fun. Everyone worked together. Everyone helped each other out on the hill. The arrogance of Alpine wasn't there. The camaraderie around everyone was just really cool and fun and friendly and really nice environment to be around, which made it fun. So it was a big change coming off the Alpine, whether it was Europa Cup or World Cup, because it's all very quite arrogant. not bad mouthing Alpine, love Alpine, but it is an arrogant environment to be in, because just the way it is, and it is big money event. So it was nice. It was a nice change to be in something more fun and enjoyable.
The one thing that I wanted to ask, because we always love it when I get freestyle, we snowboarders or skiers from the cross on, is kind of like the tactics, things like sledging, kind of just, you know, that sort of stuff there. I found an interview that you did around Sochi, and you said in this interview about the sport, you said it can be, you can be a bit sneaky. You said you wouldn't say you're dirty. You're definitely not dirty in anyone, but you said the girls that are a bit sneaky and dirty are sneaky and dirty back. And then you said you don't see these things on camera, but there's definitely things that happen during a race that the camera doesn't really see the severity of. Can you clarify this and bring in some any examples about something during a race that maybe we never get to see, that people would be very interested to find out what happens in a ski cross race?
Look, things are cleaned up now. There's rules around what you can and can't do, and you'll get a yellow card or red card if you do something serious, like put someone offline on purpose and they crash, you can be red carded and disqualified. Same sort of like soccer rules, I guess. That's where it's been taken from. So you get yellow card, it's a warning. Two yellow cards, basically it's the red card and you get another one. So people were, say you're going along and there was someone next to you, people were flicking their ski out, and so your inside ski would go under you and you'd fall and be out. Grabbing, you know, argy-bargy stuff and holding your back with elbows. Grabbing poles. it was really dirty at the beginning, and it's cleaned up along the way. It was very dangerous there for a while. The year going into Vancouver, the first year ski cross was at the Olympics. There was 88 girls on the World Cup start in San Candido, and by the end of the season, I don't even know, like maybe there was 50 or under 50.
Wow.
So many were injured. One, you had a lot of random people coming in, never doing ski cross before, but also the courses weren't safe. It was very dirty. Lots of stuff going on that, the jumps weren't made very well back then, whereas it's so different now. It was very early days back then.
Bit of a Wild West situation.
It was going
on with that, which, I mean, it's probably a stupid question to ask, Jenny, but I'm guessing it's for the better now, or do you think kind of like some of that, you know, things that you could do back then and can't do now can be useful?
No. The courses were terrible. Not always, but some of the courses weren't made very well. Really hard on the bodies, high injuries. It's definitely cleaner now. The courses run very well. The skiing ability has gotten much better. As it's evolved, it's definitely grown, and I definitely wouldn't bring any of the old stuff back in.
You mentioned, of course, qualifying a long time out from each of your Olympics. In the lead up to Vancouver, though, just beforehand, pretty significant injuries going into those games, and then I believe you had a knee reconstruction directly after Vancouver. I mean, what sort of happened in the lead up to those games, and I'm guessing ultimately finished 13th, probably not what you wanted to achieve at those games. I mean, sort of take us through that experience of Vancouver.
Yes, my worst Olympics experience to date and my worst year, I feel, of my life in my sporting world.
Glad that we can cover this right away then, Jenny. You're welcome that I brought this up.
What did I do? I did my meniscus in September of 20, what are we going into? Are we going, you know, so 2009. So that was all right. Fixed that up. Got overseas. I think I'm going to say we were 6 weeks out from the Olympics, maybe even five. I had 3 weeks to recover. So I had the surgery. I had done some cartilage damage and it was a flap. So I had to get that taken off and they did micro fractions to my bone. And normally you would have 3 to 4 weeks on crutches, no weight bearing, and then you rehab after that. But clearly I didn't have time for that. So I think I had 3 weeks from memory to get back on snow, rehab it and compete. All very quick time frame. So not only was I had the setback in September, I had the other surgery leading into that, but I just also had a disaster year. I was a medal hope leading into the Vancouver Olympics because I was fifth in the world with a couple of podiums under my belt from the year before. So there was a lot of pressure. I changed my game plan going in, which put a lot of pressure on myself to compete well. And I was just not in a good place mentally at all. And then the injuries on top of it. So post the games, I had a loose ACL from a few years ago, and it was just like, let's get this fixed. It's causing too many problems. So, yeah, post Sochi. Where am I? Vancouver. Hmm. Got that fixed.
And then, I mean, sort of in that period between then and Sochi, bronze medal at the X Games, a couple of World Cup medals as well. How do you compare the X Games to the Olympics? I mean, outside of the extreme nature of an X Games, but it's something we've never really covered much on this show. Lot less pressure. I'm sure you may be in that environment where it's taking it on board a little bit more as you're touching on sort of the reasons why maybe you didn't relish the Olympics as much.
Yeah, look, X Games was the Olympics, the ski cross prior to Olympics picking ski cross up. So, but it's also, yeah, it's a fun event. There's a lot going on, but also the course is big and it's big money to win for us. So, it was a fun event, mostly because I feel the adrenaline was just pumping at max. Fast the course is usually about a minute longer than we're all used to, so we're just totally barely standing up at the end of each heat. I don't know, it was a really fun event. Mostly, I guess, you know, you've got the snowboard going on, you've got all these people going on, you treat it again like a rock star. It's just fun. It was a fun event, big fun event. So not just a little sort of ski cross pro tour. It was, you know, the big bells and whistles in America, so pumped up again. it's a real cool event.
Because I know there's a lot of people that they still kind of treat that as like their Olympics of their sport, right? I mean, there are still sports, obviously, where that is still the pinnacle of the sport. But when now you've got something like a ski cross, it's an Olympic sport and an X Games sport. I can imagine there are some athletes which getting a bronze at the X Games might mean more than getting a bronze at the Olympics to them.
Well, I would find that hard to believe if you would say that your X Games bronze medal was better than your X Games, than your Olympic bronze medal. But, yeah, look, it's up there. It would probably be the one after an Olympic medal that you would say would be your goal.
Kind of like how, say, summer athletes have the Commonwealth Games or something like that, right? Because, obviously, there's no Commonwealth Games for a winter athlete, so.
Yeah, or like a world European whatever, where everyone's at, like
does that then mean that like your bronze that you got at the X Games, that's like the peak of your career in terms of the what you achieved across the years?
It's not what I say is my highlight in ski cross. Funny enough, I would say my fifth at World Champs in 2000 and 11 would have been the highlight of my career because of the way I handled myself, not because of and how I performed, not because of the actual result, because obviously I've had silver and bronze at World Cups, X Games. But yeah, the fifth was my sort of standout to me.
That then going into Sochi, like, I mean, did that, how was the confidence of you talk about wanting to have fun at Sochi, but I mean, obviously with the things that you had achieved in between that, I mean, how were you feeling at that point? And were you going into Sochi thinking medal, I can do this?
Yeah, obviously originally I was going into Sochi thinking medal. I don't think I would have done another 4 years if that wasn't the plan. But we unfortunately had a lot of equipment issues going in, which basically screwed my whole season up. And we were scrambling.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by equipment issues?
I put my trust into someone and my skis were destroyed, basically. And nice. We had to scramble to try and recover them. They were made hollow. So I was skiing on the edge, not on the base. And so we had to scramble to try and repair it or fix it, or do we repair it or do we get new skis and work to try to get them running again? So we tried to fix the issue. They weren't perfect, but they were much better and they were fast at the games. But my problem was I hadn't raced, really. I hadn't been racing. I hadn't been competitive. So going into the Olympics, just being on my game with having people around me and needing to overtake or focus on what I needed to do, I just wasn't in that race headspace where I should have been. Half the time I wasn't even qualifying in top 16 or, there were just issues. So I just didn't have the best lead into that games. And so I honestly wasn't expecting more than I did. I was obviously not up there going, oh, who cares? I'll just have fun. I was still obviously going to try my best and do what I could, but I just wasn't in – I just didn't have the race experience that year to pull off what I wanted to originally.
I think you touched on before knowing that that was going to be your last Olympics. Was there any ever desire after that to push on towards 2018?
No, look, I was done. The issue for me, like, I've come out of retirement three times, could be four.
John Farnham of skiing. There we go.
I've always felt like I have more to give. I never quite reached the pinnacle. I never was able to do what I wanted to do. I had the ability to, but there were issues, whether it was injuries or equipment or, you know, team or whatever. There was always things that I just didn't have the best set up and lead into things, or I feel like I could have done more. So I kept coming out of retirement because I feel like I could do more. I can do more, and I still feel like I can do more.
That's what we're saying. Sponsors, you're listening. Come on.
Exactly. So yeah, that's I think Yana Pittman, she mentioned something on Insight once. I think it was around depression and sport. The depression after sport and the struggles that you have. And she mentioned about how she kept coming back out of retirement about her never quite feeling like she'd given it, like she just hadn't done enough yet. She knew she could do more, but things, her injuries and that got in the way. So that was, and that really hit me. I was like, that's it for me too. I know I could have done more. I have more to give, and I just didn't quite have nothing aligned.
All jokes aside about you coming out of retirement again, Jenny, but can you use that sort of in your post-professional athlete career, like in terms of other endeavours that you've achieved or pushed towards, or something that maybe you can think of that you can push that out into the universe and still use that?
I mean, I guess in ways. It's not the same though either, right? Like, sport was my life. That was all I gave a shit about. I didn't really study. I did a couple of things. I dabbled. I did start doing a degree in sports management, but decided that I didn't need a degree for that. I didn't want to go into administration within the sport area, mostly around the politic issues. Not very politically correct.
No Zali Stegel style career is what you're saying.
Yeah, right? Okay, right. Yep. No. But I mean, in ways, yes, of course. But yeah, it's I struggle in life after sport, because I haven't found something that I love doing and that I can put all my heart into. So for me, I've struggled in that. But you know, that's not everyone. Some people find things right after and they love it and they don't know why they didn't retire earlier. And I'm like, what?
Well, the two things I take from that is, one, the retirement is going to end and you'll get back out of it. And two, never play like a board game or a video game against Jenny Lyons, because there's all that competitiveness where you're just taking it all out. Like, I'm going to beat you in Mario Kart or something like that.
Yeah, a little bit competitive, but my daughter is very competitive too. And if I don't let her win, there's tears. So I'm used to pretending not to be very good.
Does that then translate though into like your children grow up and they obviously pursue whatever they want to pursue? If all of a sudden your daughter said, like, Mum, I want to do skiing. I mean, what's your thoughts? No, straight away, no. All right, there's the answer. If you're listening to this one day, you know why you weren't allowed to do skiing, right?
Yeah, no, we always did. Like, me and my husband have always said, if we lived in Europe or North America, sure, but not here in Australia. Again, different for snowboarding or freestyle, it's a different, but because there is a lot of support here in those sports. Alpine, no, but I feel you sort of need to start in Alpine to have the ability to be a good mogul skier or snowboard. Like, it's, I mean, not necessarily a snowboarder, but you need to be living the winters, and you just can't do that here. So, yes, if we decide to live overseas one year because my husband gets a kick-ass job over there, but otherwise it's a very expensive life, and we just can't afford that.
Which, just on that, you touched on that. Back in Salt Lake, it was Australia's biggest ever Alpine team. And when we recently spoke to Maddie Hoffman, of course, who is, you know, doing great things out there in the world, but how have you kind of seen Alpine, and it's obviously seemingly dropped off a lot, sort of, I guess, since you hung up the skis, and what can we do to change that? How do we get these freestylers to give up freestyle and come to Alpine?
Yeah, look, things are very different when I came through. We had the sport recreation camp where you would do like a two-week intensive program, and you would then win a scholarship to train and compete overseas. And you're just with the sport and rec team, really. And so we'd go overseas, you win your scholarship, whatever, you go overseas, you'd be with the team, same coaches, same setup. And that was how we all sort of came through. And then when you got too old to be on these scholarships anymore, sort of past high school, once you finished high school, you couldn't be on there anymore. But you know, you get onto the state team, and again, that was with the coaches and the around the same people, and so we had a really good coaching system set up going through. We had government funding, so like, you know, if I want a full scholarship to train and compete overseas, I don't pay for anything, and unless I wanted to stay longer. But my flights are all covered, the cars are mostly covered, and if you're going to stay longer, you just have to throw in some money towards the van and your accommodation, but I mean, that was nothing, because we had like two vans of people going around. Like, we had the way to do it was right. Now, because there is nothing like this now, everyone's off doing their things independently. It's very expensive. So trying to even pull a team together, no one wants to do that because they've got their own thing going, and they've got you know, an interest and best interest at heart, and that's fair enough. It was just done very differently, and Alpine skiing was not that expensive back then compared to now, where now, like, you need minimum with a kid wanting to train race overseas, you're looking at 50, 60 grand a year to support them.
Wow.
And then people think, like, oh, but when they get good, it'll get less. It's like, no, when they get good, you need more, because they need more.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're looking at 150 grand a year as a World Cup, Europa Cup level athlete if you're funding everything on your own. It is not a cheap sport, and you are competing against the Austrians that have millions of dollars, plus they're at home all the time as well.
And it's also always that, you know, cycle where to get good, you've got to compete in those, and to get good and to get exposure so we can get back on the podium at the Olympics, that would bring in more, you know, you've got to get there. But to get there, you've got to have the money. So it's kind of like it's keep going there. So as much as we love seeing the success of our freestyle skiers and our snowboarders, it's fantastic. We maybe need to push a few of these young kiddies to stick to Alpine so that maybe we can, you know, some of the rich family, if you're rich and you're listening to this show, first of all, sponsor Jenny. Second of all, sponsor us. Thirdly, put your kids into Alpine skiing. You can afford it and then help us get it so that in 10, 20 years time, the not so wealthy children can get into Alpine. See, it's a trickle down effect, Jenny, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and then when they've done their Alpine stuff, then you shuffle them into moguls or you know, ski across or wherever where it's a bit more affordable and there's programs to support it.
See, I keep trying to say this every time we get like an aerial skier on the show. It's like, great, cool, you were poached from gymnastics. But every time we get a gymnast on the show, I'm like, can you just like go off to the Jeff Henke Center and steal some, you know, air so we can have some good gymnasts? We've got good gymnasts, but like we haven't had, you know what I mean? Like it's.
Yeah.
Freestyle skiing, stop stealing things, all right? That's what I'm trying to say. Stop stealing Alpine skiers, stop stealing gymnasts, you know, just stick to your lane. we love all of our freestyle skiers who are listening. Before we get to some fun wrap-up questions, Jenny, just two quick things I want to touch on. I bring up freestyle skiing. I have to bring him up. It's lore on this show. Dale Begg-Smith, can you give me any Dale stories at all, be it from the Olympics or anything? Do you know where he is? Just talk about Dale Begg-Smith, please.
Look, I feel sorry for Dale. I know the media gave the poor guy a hard time. Look, I didn't even really know him, but when you did speak to him, he was quite chatty. He was a introvert. He was a bit of a hermit. He didn't want to be in the media. He didn't want to be around it, and everyone was in his face. And the more he refused it, the more everyone came at him. I actually used to feel sorry for him because I could understand where he was coming from a bit. And he didn't need to be in the media. He didn't need sponsors. He didn't need to promote himself. He just wanted to compete. And he would have probably competed for, I don't know.
He didn't need the money.
Egypt or, a random country that doesn't have a lot of winter sports athletes. He would have, I mean, for him it was about competing and being able to, you know, be his best. It wasn't. He wasn't there to, you know, promote Australia and, you know, I think he was very grateful for us picking him up and him being able to be with his old coach and stuff. But I don't have any Dale stories. He was a nice guy. He was very serious. He was very focused. He did very well in, you know, his company and the sport. But no Dale stories. I think he's struggled to find many Dale stories.
Oh, you'd be surprised. Like the beauty, the enigma of Dale, Jenny, is because like this is the thing, everything that you say there, but then like you'll just find out random things that he will do. And I used to love these like rumors about him that he had his own private island and that he would basically like call up the AOC like a month before going like, yeah, I'll come to the Olympics, sure. Like it's just like this enigma around him. And I forget the name of the athlete in Beijing, but I love that he made Dale Begg-Smith made the news because, again, nobody can find him after Sochi, basically. But he texted one of the Australian Olympians who had competed, and basically the text was like, you were robbed, you did great, and just said, Dale. And then that was it. That was like the only message, and then went back into the mist.
that's a good text. I would have been happy with that.
All right, like I mean, imagine you just look at your phone; it just says from Dale, and you're like, "Is this who I think it's from?" Like a DBS, like you know, there it is. And the pub trivia that I always love out there for people who aren't Olympic geeks like myself is that when you say who is the most successful Australian Winter Olympian, well, who was one of the two co-successful? It's Tora Brighton, Dale Begg-Smith, gold and silver medalists.
Yeah. That's true.
People don't have that. The other one I've got to bring up, Jenny, now you talk about coming out of retirement and everything. I've got a bit of an inspiration for you. We have a mascot on this show. I'd like you to be introduced to our show's mascot. First of all, can you tell what he is?
It looks like a chair.
It is a chair. Yes, there we go. This is Cherry. Now, Cherry's been through a lot. Cherry could be a skier, I think. Like, I mean, he's a bit flimsy.
Might trip over.
got a medal. So, you know, just there as well. But, like, I mean, if you were to come out of retirement, could you use Cherry as a bit of inspiration, you know, coming out of adversity, a bit battered and bruised, but, you know, come out on top?
I mean, There's always room for mascots, I guess, somewhere along the way. Canadian team used to have one. I don't know if they still have one, but they used to travel around with a team mascot.
No, Australians didn't have a mascot. Dale wasn't your mascot or anything like that.
No mascot. I mean, I had my own team support mascot that used to hang out my bed.
What was that? What was that? Was that a chair?
No, it was a dog.
Ah.
It was not a real dog, a stuffed one, but its name was Henry, and he traveled with me since I was eight, over the world. So, yeah, he got ditched, though. Before I got married, he got ditched.
Oh, poor Henry.
He's in my son's room now.
Oh, well, he got passed on. There you go. Yeah. Well, if Henry doesn't, you know, stick to the same thing that he used to do, you're welcome to Cherry. So
great. Thank you. That he would be fun to have around. There'd be a lot of questions about that one.
Very inspirational. Sure. There you go. Yeah. Jenny, we wrap up every single interview with a set of fun get to know you style questions. As always, these were based on a questionnaire that Team Canada gave their athletes ahead of both the Rio and Pyeongchang Olympics. I'm going to use the questions that were given to Evan McCochrane here. So I'm going to use those. And there is a drawing element. You don't have to. You can maybe pass this on to your kids if you want to. Basically, okay. If you feel the need, you can draw a picture of yourself. You can draw a picture of an Australian animal. Entirely up to you. Draw us a picture of Dale Begg Smith. We wouldn't say no to that. I've got to reach my quota. We've got to say his name a certain amount of times per episode.
Okay, right.
And I'm hoping it's going to be like Beetlejuice, that eventually he will just appear and he will come on the show. Like, honestly, if he came on the show and was just like, hi, thanks for having us, and left, I would be fine with that. Best interview ever. We'll start off with Jenny. Growing up, I get to a point in the interview, I can't speak anymore. Your favourite sports team was?
Team?
Mm.
Oh, goodness. I was more of an individual person.
You can give us some athletes. If you didn't have a team, who were some of the athletes and maybe your favourite athletes growing up?
Early on, Nadia Comaneci, and then like swimming, like as I got older, Susie O'Neill. They're still swimming, mind you. Yeah.
Which I saw.
I didn't have a lot. I used to look up to different athletes for different things. I liked them for different things, but I never was like, oh, my God, it's, you know, Joe Blow.
Might answer my question. I saw you've got a great video on YouTube sort of going over a lot of your skiing career and some of the highlights showing Salt Lake. There's a picture of you and Susie O'Neill. So you obviously got to rub shoulders there.
She was the athlete person at Salt Lake, and she was super cool she was awesome.
Yeah. And on that too, actually, random question. I said his name briefly before. What's it like to reflect back on your first ever Olympics and have Bruce McAvaney commentating on you? Like, that's got to be amazing.
So good. He was the best commentator. I won't even talk about bloody Vancouver.
Is that James Brayshaw? Did you have him? Or is he doing snowboarding?
What's his name? He was game show host. He was a bloody disaster. Shouldn't have had him, but I think he was on contract. But I didn't have
Andrew
choice.
O'Keefe, maybe? Was he doing that? He wouldn't have been commentating.
I shouldn't know his name. Anyway, he belittled the women's events so badly. It
wasn't
was
Eddie
so
McGuire,
cool.
Channel 9 had it then, didn't they?
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll get to the bottom of that. But back to Bruce.
If you're looking out, disaster, should never commentate, especially women's event ever again.
Right, okay, well, we'll find out that one. But Bruce, though, Bruce, the
Bruce
absolute
great. He was awesome.
And he was on the ground too, because that was back when they used to send the commentators actually to
and
the
game. And we all met him before, and he asked questions, and he was really into it. He did his homework, and knew everything about everyone. He's who should commentate every sport.
I miss Bruce commentating winters. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think he would have done some in Turin, no doubt. But I mean, obviously, then what 9 had Vancouver, 10 had Sochi, and he hasn't been to a winter since. So yeah, you've got that's great footage to have with Bruce commentating you on that one.
Yeah.
Your favorite music artists are?
Sorry about it. Music. I like music, but I don't know names.
Do you have a favorite genre perhaps that you go to?
It depends on my mood. Like if we're going out to a party or something or a wedding or whatever, I might put something on that gets you going. If I'm a bit down, I might listen to some like Ed Sheeran. but nowadays it's it's much what the kids want to listen to.
What are the kids listening to then?
Well, my daughter's, you know, Taylor Swift and Miley Cyrus and at the moment, and she's only 5 and a half, so she's got some good taste.
At least you're probably not pressuring you for Taylor's tickets then.
No,
for the concert.
Yeah, and then my son really likes the Wiggles, and he's two, so I could nearly sing every Wiggle song.
Hey.
The old Wiggles, not the new Wiggles. Yeah,
there's too many Wiggles now, isn't there? Like, back to four. Why is there, like, 8 Wiggles
now? I get diversity, but for God's sake, don't take it so far the other direction. You ruin everything.
I know. Like, we used to know them all personally, basically, when there was just the four of them. Now,
I don't even know how many there is at 8.
I know. That's the thing. And the colours, like, it's just like, what colours are we up to? Anyway.
Yeah.
Your favourite place to compete in was?
Ooh, in Alpine, St. Moritz, in ski across, Aspen at the X Games. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. What is one thing you have always wanted to do?
I feel like I've done a lot. When my mum passed away, I sort of felt like I've done so much in my life. If I was given my descendants tomorrow, I was content. But now what I want to do is watch my kids grow up.
Aw, very sweet. I like that. I mean, you're looking at Evan's answer of jumping out of an aeroplane. Cool.
No, never. I will never. Never, ever.
Keep watching kids grow up. That's sweet. Yeah, I'm not
an adrenaline junkie. I do not need to jump out of an aeroplane.
This is coming from somebody who did downhill skiing, and you're saying you're not an adrenaline. You've got some, you know, fearless nature in there, but I like that. I like hearing that. I also love the fact that Evan had to add a point after this. Said, jump out of an airplane with a parachute. Thanks, Evan. I'm glad he cleared that up. Just to clarify.
A working parachute.
Yeah, just you'd be very technical with that one. What is your favorite movie?
Oh, God, you've got some hard ones. Not a favorite. I like all the sort of war-y ones or, you know, go in and save, like, you know, you go in super stealth and save people. But I love a good soppy romance too. I don't really have a favorite. I'm really bad at these questions.
I was going to change that to, like, what are the kids watching maybe? Are you sort of having to deal with, like, Peppa Pig and Bluey and, like, kind of movies and things like that?
All the Disney ones,
yeah. Yeah, Pixar and things like, which sometimes can make, like, a good excuse. So if you had, like, I'm guessing, favorite movies as a kid that you can, like, show your kids and then hope they like them, and if they don't, then you get heartbroken, right? So
mostly watch kids' shows. You never watch the news at night when they've gone to bed. I'm binging on Maths at the moment.
Ah, right.
Classic, corny, terrible, toxic.
Why not? All right, that's what it's there for. The last one for you, Jenny, and I'm going to change this one. The question here is my favorite place to visit in Canada is, but I'm going to change that to what is your favorite place in Australia to visit?
Sydney. I'm in Sydney.
Straight answer. So you're not in Sydney right now.
No, I'm in a very cold place.
I'm from Tasmania, so, you know.
Well, it's been warmer in Tassie than down here in Torquay. So
yeah, true. And I'm in Sydney right now, and not too bad today, but it's been quite hot recently, so, you know.
Yeah, well, everyone said they wish they're in Melbourne. I'm like, grass is greener. We're complaining about how we have not had summer.
Here it's kind of been the opposite. It's a little bit too much. Jenny, if people want to stay up to date with you, social media, things like that, is there anywhere that people can sort of see what you're up to in, as you prepare for that comeback, of course? For the
only on Instagram these days. I only use Facebook if I have to, if there's some group thing I've got a link to, like school. But, yeah, Instagram, on Instagram, JennyLines_Ollie. That's it.
No,
but, you know,
no TikTok?
I mean, it's all
TikTok
family stuff.
TikTok?
No.
Oh.
TikTok, I'm 45.
Before I end this, and this isn't trying to be mean in terms of saying how old you are, it's more of a case of I can ask you this question and you will get it, because I'm sick of getting like 18-year-olds in the show and I ask them this question, they don't know who I'm talking about. Jenny Lyons, what is your favourite Meatloaf song?
Oh, I was never a Meatloaf fan.
But you've got to know he's, like, at least you know who he is. That's my point. Everybody I ask that question, he doesn't know who he is.
That was that one popular song that was on there forever. Matter the hell, but I mean, it was good for the bit, and then it was like, oh, turn it off. Overplayed on the radio, like every good bloody song.
I had to ask it. I'm sorry. It's been too long since I've had somebody in the show who would know who Meatloaf is. So
I do know who
yes,
he is.
Good. All right, Jenny, it's been an absolute honor to have you on the show. Thank you so much, and please keep us updated with this career. We look forward to seeing you, Milan Cortina, the French Alps, Salt Lake, 2034. You know, a return to where it all started.
Yeah, well, that would be a her first at that age when I hit that one.
An absolute massive thanks to Jenny for her time. Pleasure to have her on the show. As always, if you want to see the video version of that, you can head to our YouTube channel to see that as well. Had to get that Meatloaf question in at the end. I mean, come on. When do I ever get to ask that question anymore? So appreciate Jenny answering that one. But yeah, very honest and open about her career, learning a little bit about maybe why the Olympics just weren't her favorite experiences. So always good to kind of hear a different angle of that one as well. Got to bring up Dale and Bruce. Why wouldn't you bring up Dale and Bruce? And will we see her competing in another Olympics? Never say never. So stay tuned for that and follow her on social media, and maybe you'll see the skis strapped back on her feet. But thanks again to Jenny for her time. In the meantime, what you're going to be hearing on this show, plenty more great episodes. Of course, we have another opening ceremony episode coming your way very, very shortly. And I've been teasing for a few weeks as well, an interview with a coach and former Olympian, not a former Olympian, Ben, an Olympian. Once an Olympian, always an Olympian. Come on. That is the motto that we know is a motto out there. But he is a coach of a prominent team at the Paris Olympics. And as I have teased to before, the only Olympic medalist from his country in the history of all the Olympics, he is the only person, man or woman, to have won a medal representing one country. So I will let that sit for a little bit, and you can find out next week. We will let you know who will be on the show the following week. But a massive, massive chat that is coming your way very, very shortly. Remember to like us on all the social media channels to stay up to date with everything. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, TikTok. And then subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. We're on all of those. So make sure that you get those. You never miss an episode. Thanks again to Jenny. Thanks again for you for tuning in. You took the words right out of my mouth. Put a sock in it, Mountain. Thanks to Jason Momoa and the Birmingham Bull. And most importantly, remember to go left.
When the stars make it through, just like pasta, that's amore.
That's amore.
When you dance down the street with the club at your feet, you're in love. When you walk in a dream, but you know you're not dreaming, signore. Excuse me, but you see, back in old Napoli, that's amore.